Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, starting the show by talking with you about snowshoeing. Darren Bush back with us, the chief paddling evangelist and owner of Rutabaga Paddle Sports, and he creates snowshoes, and of course, he knows a lot about it. So we'll talk with him about snowshoeing. We can get into paddling too, but let's talk snowshoeing first. What questions do you have, or what comments do you have? Maybe you want to know about selecting the right gear. Give us a call at 800-642-1234, or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. We'd love to hear from you. Darren Bush, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
How long have you been making snowshoes?
I made my first pair in winter of 1987. my wife is pregnant with our first child, Whitney, and we were sitting around our little efficiency apartment. We were both students, and I said, we need to get out of town. And we found Mosquito Hill Nature Center up in New London was offering a snowshoe building class for the weekend. And I said, let's just go build snowshoes, because it was just to get out of the house, right? Well, that was pair number one, and I just finished lacing pair number 95 last night. So,
well, you make, I've seen your snowshoes, you make absolutely beautiful snowshoes, and I know it takes some patience for sure, but what kinds of skills do you need besides patience a bit to make snowshoes?
I think that you nailed it. It's just, it's patience. And what I found when I teach this is that the first shoe takes a day, maybe a day and a half, to do a very, very simple pattern. And the second one takes maybe about half that. And what happens after a while is you start to see the patterns that emerge. And you start to see something that just looks wrong and you don't know why. And you just pick it out and you go back and fix it. So I can pretty much do it now without thinking.
What about materials? What kind of materials do you use?
So ash frames. Ash is the traditional frame for snowshoes. It's strong, has a long linear grain, so it's not going to have runouts. You know, the grain's not going to run out and split. And it's usually cut, not sawn, or if it's sawn, it's sawn with the grain as close as possible. And then you clean up so that there's no run out. That is when the grain comes to the edge. So that's a weak spot. They're flexible. They're strong. They're not the lightest, but they're not. It's a great wood for frames. I made a pair of the cherry ones, and they were a little lighter, but a little brittle. And I wasn't quite confident to use them. Use them heavy anyway. And then for my lacing, I've done them with babiche, which is, you know, essentially rawhide. But it's smelly, and it's kind of like lacing with linguine that's overboiled and soaked in something really foul. So not fun. So what I do is I have a gentleman, well, a company in California, who custom weaves lacing for me. It's a tubular nylon webbing, and I can't get it any other place because it's 3/16 wide instead of, you know, mostly, usually it's like a half an inch or more, and I like a finer weave, so I get it at 1,000 yards at a time, or 1,000 yards a roll. I usually get two rolls, so that's, you know, 6,000 feet. That's usually enough to get me through, I don't know, about 28 pairs, something like that.
Wow. Do you hang on to every pair, or what do you do with them?
I sell them so that I can buy more materials, so I can make more. So my friends, they all have pairs that I've, you know, given them over the years. And when I get down to one or two pairs left, I sell those so that I can buy more materials.
Oh, my goodness me. Well, a listener emailed. She would like to hear about the differences between deep snowshoes and snowshoes for racing or groom trails. She wore her deep snowshoes in the book Across the Bay last year, and it was a major mistake. She's a newbie, still learning, and would love to know more.
Yeah, so traditional snowshoes, you know, with the frame and the webbing, tend to be a little bit larger, a little bit heavier, but they have better flotation. So I sold a pair to a gentleman in Park City who goes out with his friends when it's powdery. And, you know, he sinks a little bit, but they can't go in their smaller shoes. That doesn't have the flotation necessary. So if I want to run across the bay, I certainly wouldn't want to do it in my shoes. Modern shoes tend to be a lot smaller. They have a solid decking instead of a webbed decking. So snow slides off those very easily. But they're, you know, they're usually aluminum with some steel or other metals with a synthetic deck. And then these usually are called crampons, and those go underneath the binding where your foot gets strapped on that have teeth on them. So they're really good for trails, for consolidated snow, for anything that's icy, going up a hill, anytime you need that more traction. So I find that most of the time I'm not in a hurry. I mean, I gave up going fast years ago. I just want to walk. So it just depends on the kind of snow you're in.
Yeah. So for the listener who emailed, she wore the deep snowshoes in Book Across the Bay last year, big mistake. So she might be more inclined to go with the, I don't know if you call them modern or the different, the newer snowshoes that.
Yeah, most people are using more modern shoe. That's just, they're simple, they're easy. You just put them on and walk. They're narrower, so you have a little bit easier of a gait. They're usually lighter. So there's lots of good things about new snowshoes. They're wonderful. For most people, you know, walking the dog, on the golf course, or, you know, places where it's consolidated, you know, not on the ski trails, but, you know, other places, they work great. They're fantastic.
Yeah, I have a pair of the new ones and have used them on trails and found them really well, really great. But if you get off trails in powdery snow, it's not going to work so well.
Right.
And I have watched races. I've attended some running races, snowshoe running races, and man, they can really move on those on a trail.
Yeah, the small shoes are not much bigger than a foot. You know, they're basically 6 inches is wide and 12 to 15 inches long. And, you know, a lot of them, the racers actually have a binding where they actually screw a dedicated pair of running shoes to them. So they're fastened mechanically right to the shoe, and they don't weigh anything. So yeah, you can run. I mean, I don't think I have that aerobic capacity, but there are people that run marathons in those shoes.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. Well, let's take some calls. You can join in. Open lines get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Let's go to Betty in Brown Deer. Betty, hi. Thank you for calling.
Oh, Dandy, hi. I'm anxious to get started doing some snowshoeing. I'm 76. My balance isn't great. I think I'd do better on snowshoes than cross countries. But a number of the parks near me have groomed trails, and I don't want to screw up the cross-country trails with snowshoes. How do you find a good place to go snowshoeing?
Well, first of all, thank you for being so considerate, because some people are not. But getting back to your first question about balance, you can use your cross-country ski poles with snowshoes. Sometimes they're a little too long, but most of the time they work fine. That'll give you, you know, a little bit extra balance. So I would recommend that. If you're in a groomed trail situation, they're sometimes almost always wide enough where you can walk off to the side, and that doesn't really offend anybody. It's when you're going right over the tracks in the middle and busting those things up. So I think people can coexist just fine.
Yeah, yeah, there shouldn't be any problem. Go and check them out, Betty. Yeah. I bet you're going to find, at least when I, all the trails that I've been on, there's usually plenty of room on the side to just go ahead and do it. And I love the pole idea, Darren. I think that's a great idea.
Yeah,
thank you very
much.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you, Betty. Well, Mary in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Mary.
Hi there. How are you?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Well, you know, I made myself, I took a class a number of years ago and made a pair of snowshoes. And I finished the lashing. They turned out beautiful. They really did. But I never put a finish on them. And they've been in the rafters in my garage ever since. And I'd like to get them out and finish them. But I don't know what to put on them to finish them.
I do.
You know, like, what?
Darren says I do.
I do. So the thing you want on finishing traditional shoes is a spar varnish with a very high urethane content. You're not going to find that at Home Depot or any of the hardware stores. It's going to be less expensive. So what you need to do is go to a marine center. And what I use is Pettit, P-E-T-T-I-T, which is the house brand from West Marine. And it's about $40 a quart. Has super, super high urethane content. And what that means is that when the lace flexes, it won't crack. So, think, you know, urethane is kind of like melted down skateboard wheels, right? It's very soft and very flexible. And you can get that bound to the lacing, it really makes a very, very strong and waterproof material.
So Pettit is the name of it.
Yeah. Paul Echo Tango Tango India Tango.
Well, and any advice? Should Betty remain out in the garage when she does this?
Yeah, I mean, it's like anything that's, you know, a varnish. It's going to have, you know, an odor to it. If you've got a heated space, make sure that you've got a lot of ventilation. Wear a respirator. I always wear a respirator just because, you know, it's probably okay not to, but why take a chance? So just yeah. a little bit of get some of those volatile chemicals out of your way. You want it to be warm. I've got three pair that are ready to varnish, and the weather has just turned on me, so I'm going to have to either wait for a while or find a heated place to do it. But yeah. You want it to be warm. You know, you want it to be over 60 degrees is usually what I do.
Mary, does that help?
Yeah, it does, but one more thing. You called it Pettit High Gloss or High what? Varnish? Polyurethane varnish?
High urethane varnish, yeah.
High urethane. Okay, I got that.
Yeah. They have a traditional amber color that you won't find anywhere else. It's like the traditional, what you'd see on an old yacht, right? The traditional amber puts a really nice color to the lacing. It looks almost like exactly like rawhide.
Hmm, that sounds great. Mary, get going. Then send me a picture. Send me a photo when it's over with, when you finish, okay? I love it. Thank you so much for calling. Darren Bush, owner of Rutabaga Paddle Sports, our guest today. Jill Nadeau's our producer, by the way. Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at snowshoeing on our show today, Larry Mueller with Darren Bush of Rutabaga Paddle Sports, and the guy who's made a lot of snowshoes, knows a lot about it. Probably take some paddling questions too, but we have lots of snowshoe questions, so let's just keep on that for a while. Lynn in Spring Green, your turn. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, thanks. I am so glad you're having this show. Take yourselves back to like preschool. I'm going to be a newbie. I live in rural Spring Green. I live out in the country, and after 4 years of Lyme disease and two car accidents before, it's like I've got my life back. I want snowshoes. I need advice to get started. What I have out here where I live would be, you know, bridle trails. I don't even know if you can go on something as narrow as deer trails, but I'm out in the boonies. and I need to know where to start. I'm like I said, I'm 70, but I'm a formerly physically active person. Currently in good health, so now you know who I am, and I'm also wondering not only the snowshoes, but footwear for yourself when you're going to put the snowshoes on. I need advice on that stuff.
Okay.
Cool. That's what I do. So first of all, anywhere you can walk, you can snowshoe. So if you want to walk on deer trails, that's fine. This means you're going to be doing what you do on deer trails when you walk on them in the summertime, right? Dodging twigs and buck brush and stuff. That's no problem. And I've got, you know, we can talk on the phone if you want to give me a call, or send me an email and I'll give you a rundown. But basically, if you can walk, you can snowshoe. There's no learning curve. You just get on, you put them on, and you walk. So I would recommend poles, again, to start with, just because that's going to give you some more balance as you get used to it. And then as far as footwear goes, I use mukluks, which are basically a leather bottom with a canvas top that's got a felt liner in them. They're super, super warm, and they're soft, kind of like a moccasin on steroids. But sorrel boots work great. Regular hiking boots work great. You might want something called a gaiter. And what that is it goes around the top of the boot and goes up your leg and keeps snow from going down the cuff of your boot. But pretty much the weather will dictate what you wear. If it's warm, you can wear a regular pair of hiking boots. If it's cold, you want to get on some heavier snow boots.
All right. Lynn, does that help?
It does. One last question. Thank you. And I will like go to the store or call or something. But I didn't even know there was a difference between deep snow and racing. I went to a used sporting goods store and they honestly weren't very helpful. And all they had in my size, given my height, was one pair of sort of racing. I'm not going to race. So I take it I want sort of what you were calling the deep snowshoes.
Deep snowshoes. It depends on where you're going. If you're mostly going on consolidated snow where it's, you know, packed down a little bit, then you don't need a big shoe. If you're going out when it's deep and drifting, then you need more flotation. But if you send me an email, I'll give you a call and we can just talk through it and I'll tell you what we have. But there's actually a snowshoe shortage because of with COVID in the summer, there is a kayak shortage and people are looking forward in the winter going, what are we going to do? And so I had to call a company in Canada and have them send me 50 pairs just to get more. So yeah, it's don't wait too long.
All right. There you go, Lynn. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Luke in Viroqua, your turn. Hi, Luke.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Darren, I have a question for you. Are there places that you actually travel to when you're looking to snowshoe, or are there websites that people consult for snow conditions? So that way, you know, for those of us who might be interested in taking a day trip or maybe an overnight, a quick overnight, what do you consult?
Well, I mean, there's snow cover websites. If you just Google Wisconsin snow cover, you'll get a map that shows how much snow is in every different place. So that's pretty easy. I usually go, you know, it's always safer, not always. It's often safer to go north, obviously. So up by Shequamigan and all the places that you normally would go and hike, you can go and snowshoe. But yeah, check the snow coverage map. If we do get snow down low down here, which is nice, and I'd love to get 12 inches tomorrow, then you can go to local places, even the state parks. But like the Kickapoo Valley Reserve out in your neck of the woods is an awesome place to snowshoe.
Yeah. Luke, thank you very much. Just relating to parks, Mick emailed to say, please don't snowshoe on track ski trails as a volunteer to Wisconsin State Parks. They spend lots of time, money, and effort to keep the skiers and snowshoers on separate trails. Ski trails are costly to groom, and at Perot State Park, much of the ski trails are volunteer-maintained. He's sure it's the same in other parks. Perot does have state park, does have separate snowshoe trails that volunteers have maintained for the last several years. So Perot State Park is one of those places where you have separate snowshoe trails.
Yeah, quite a few of them do. Blue Mountains, actually local to here, has separate snowshoeing trails. Yeah, I'm not suggesting that you trash the ones that are already there. That's obviously not something you want to do. But, like, the trails at Governor Dodge are very wide. And we just walk off to the side, even where it's just barely consolidated. But, yeah, walking over groomed trails is a big faux pas.
Yeah, for sure. Gary in Brookfield, your turn. Hi, Gary.
Hi. Thanks a lot, Larry. I was just going to reemphasize what you just talked about. You need to make the people be aware that it's not just the trails that are tracked for classic cross-country skiing. It's the large area alongside those trails where most cross-country ski trails are here in Wisconsin is tracked for skate skiers. You don't want people on snowshoes on that area either because that affects the skaters.
Yeah. A comment, Darren?
That's true. You just want to, again, stay out of places that are groomed mostly. Yeah. They spend a lot of time and money doing that. It's true.
Yeah.
But you can usually find a way to squeeze in there some places, not trash things.
All right, Gary, thank you. Mo in Okano, it's your turn. Hi, Mo. Thank you for calling.
Oh, happy Thanksgiving, guys.
To you as well.
My question is twofold. First, my comment is, normally I make my own trails through like a wooded, you'll see these brown gates, these forest kind of walk-in-only roads, and I usually cross-country ski through those. Once I have a trail broken, it's really nice because the next time I can glide about 3 or 4 feet extra instead of just walking up and down. But my question is with the snowshoes. I love the wooden ash snow shoes. I had a question on the, do you just paint that varnish on, that spar varnish? And then second, any recommendations for bindings?
Yes. So, yeah, it was in reverse order. So the bindings that I use, I get from a company in Quebec called Faber, F-A-B-E-R. And we actually carry them at the shop for this reason, is people get old shoes and go, now what do I do? So I started just buying them for myself, and I said, well, I should have them for the shop too. And it's called an A6 work binding, Alpha 6 work binding. And they're leather, and they strap on and stick your foot in. There's a strap around the heel, and you give it a pull, and away you go. So if it's a new lacing, like when I do a new pair, it'll soak up a massive amount of varnish. So I'll make sure that the varnish is warm, not hot, but I'll set it in the sun beforehand and then just lay it on the lacing and just keep picking it up off the sheet underneath it. I put down a big piece of cardboard and just keep on putting it on until it doesn't soak up anymore. After that, it doesn't take much. So you can just paint it on and, don't worry about drips and sags and all that stuff because, it's not a yacht. It's a pair of snowshoes. The more you put on, the better.
The more you put on, the better. Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah. No, thank you.
And thanks, Mo.
Tom in Janesville, your turn. Hi, Tom.
Well, thank you very much. I've always loved snowshoeing, and I have several pair of traditional shoes, including some of the old military shoes made in Norway, Maine, and I love them. But I made the mistake of loaning a couple pair of snowshoes out, and one of the people I loaned it to walked over some small stumps and punched out the lacing underneath the foot of a couple of snowshoes, and I'm wondering where I can get that lacing repaired.
As soon as you said I loaned them, I started having flop sweats. Oh, my gosh, yeah. I have shoes that are modern just for loaning. So if you want to repair it yourself, that can be done. Lacing, you can purchase. I buy lacing when I do repairs like that. I buy them from Faber. And like I said, you take the stuff. It comes in a coil. It's hard, like just like rawhide. You soak it in hot water, it gets soft and turns into linguine, and then you can relace. But it depends how fine the lacing is. It might be that they're wall hangers now, because you could spend twice as much as the shoes are worth on repairing them. If it's a wide lace, you know, half inch wide, and it doesn't have a lot of detail, that's not a hard one to fix. That's, you know, an hour.
No, so you can do it yourself, Tom. What do you think?
Well, I'll have to get some lacing then, I guess, some rawhide, and give it a try.
Yeah,
where was that? You said you can get rawhide lacing?
Faber, F-A-B-E-R.
Faber, F as in Ferry?
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
Alpha, Bravo, Echo, Romeo.
Okay, there we go, Tom. Thank you. Jolie in Mosinee, on to you now. Hi.
Hi, I'm calling to just give a tip, and I learned from snowshoeing over the years that I time myself. I've gone on trails, and I time myself that I go out for an hour, but I'll make it a half hour and then turn around on that same path. I have found sometimes I've gone on some of the trails, and they are farther than what I thought, and I'm exhausted when I get to the finish line of it.
Oh,
so just time yourself and just turn around on that same path. And the other thing too is so you don't get lost.
Yeah, and you that's go not... your own trail too, right? So
yeah,
easier to go back. Yeah.
And you know what? I've done that, and it's amazing how much new you see that you didn't see the first time you walked along a trail. You see a lot more new things. I've even had deer come out that I didn't see the first time I saw on the way back. So there you go. Thank you. Good tip. Bill in Knife River, Minnesota. Hi, Bill.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. I have a pair of that I got new in 1965, Swenson & Swenson original snowshoes with nylon cord, and that cord is still good to this day. And I'm wondering, what's your favorite kind of cord? What's your best lacing?
The best lacing is the stuff that I get made for me. But if it's going to be a really fine weave. I'll put a picture up on my Facebook page of my shoes, and it's facebook.com/pennylover. So that's easy. So you can see what the type of lacing that I'm using.
Say it again.
My website or my Facebook page. It's /pennylover.
/pennylover. Okay. Yeah.
So just go to my Facebook page, and then I'll there's some pictures up there of shoes. You just scroll through a little bit. There's a company in Minnesota called Country Ways. They're up in the Twin Cities. And it's Greg Wilcox is the guy I've been working with. He sold me lacing early on before I figured out what I wanted to do. And but they have a website, snowshoe.com. And they sell lacing. It's not online. You need to call him and ask him to give it to you. But he's got a half inch and 3/8. Those are the two sizes that he carries.
All right. Bill, there you go. Thank you so much. Annie in La Crosse, your turn. Hi, Annie.
Hi. Say, the lady who wanted to start snowshoeing, and she's a little older. I mean, I'm 72, so she's just a little older. I would find a very nice golf course to go on, because you can choose your hills, and it's a real, usually pretty easy. But remember to bring your phone in case something happens. I've been using the newer snowshoes. I got my first pair in 1994, and I just love them. But I also have the older snowshoes without them, and I'm wondering if there's anything that you could retrofit them with so they would have the ice crampons on the bottom also?
Yes, there is. I haven't seen them in a while, but there are it's basically a crampon is just sort of a bent piece of metal with teeth on it, and then they'll put that on the bottom of the shoe, and then they'll put a plate on the top of the shoe and put bolts through it and squeeze it together, so you've got that crampon. I'm not super crazy about them just because I don't know what it does to the lace over time, because you've got metal against, you know, something soft.
Yeah.
But I don't know that they don't work. And there's some places I haven't seen one in a long time, but you can get a traditional shoe and you can put a more modern binding on it. It's kind of tricky, but I would say don't, just for the durability of the shoes.
Oh, all right. There you go, Annie. Thank you. Craig in Onalaska, your turn. Hi, Craig.
Good morning. I have a quick question as far as age requirements for snowshoeing. I have a 3.5-year-old granddaughter that really enjoys snow, and I'm wondering if snowshoeing would be good for her.
It would be. They do make kids' shoes. They're kind of hard to find. We love them, so we always have them. The trick is, so Darren's rule for paddling is 15 minutes per year of age. So when I have a 2-year-old, you got a half an hour. You know, 4-year-old, you got an hour. So I would say that's the same, probably the same thing for snowshoeing, is you want to have, you know, take her out for an hour max and bring her back before she wants to, so she has a good experience.
Okay. What would your recommendation be for a shoe then? Is that based on weight or height or?
Well, for kids, it's based on the smallest one you can get, because you're not going to take them in deep snow or they'll have a miserable experience and hate you forever. You're going to want to take them to a place that's well consolidated. And we've got a couple different options. We've got Atlas, and they're nice. I just got some shoes from Canada, from Faber, from the same company, and there's some kid shoes, and they're very reasonable. It's got a wood frame with a plastic deck, so it's a hybrid. It's actually pretty cool. But I bought everything I could get when I found them, just because, I mean, I said, just send me everything you have, just because of the demand.
Oh, so there you go, Craig. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, thanks.
Sure.
Dennis in Duluth, Minnesota, your turn. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, good morning. My question is, I have several pairs of snowshoes, some of the modern type and the old Ojibwe, the wood frame ride basket weave. But one pair has bindings on it. I bought them that way, and they're look like rubber, but they're called Bob Mackie bindings from the Upper Peninsula. And I'll tell you, what's your comment on those? I find those really handy to use. And what kind of comments do you have?
They are a very fine binding for a lot of situations and not so great for others. For most times on level ground, they're great for getting in and out of them. They're very fast to put on and off. So if you have them in like by the back door and you're going to go out to, you know, check on the fire pile or the wood pile or whatever, they're great. Because, you know, if there's no lacing, you just slide your foot in and pull it up and you're done. They don't offer a lot of lateral stability. Your foot can shift side to side quite easily because they don't have more structure in the binding. But I think they're great for a lot of people. A lot of schools who have, you know, nature centers that have like 20 pair of shoes, they have Bob Mackie bindings, just because the kids can put them on and go.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Dennis, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. I wanted to get to some of our emails, too. Wendy from Manitowoc emailed to mention Terra Lilla Trails in Vilas County for snowshoeing. They have some groomed and some less groomed trails, and the scenery is gorgeous. So Terra Lilla, is it Lilla? Terra Lilla Trails in Vilas County, L-I-L-A, Terra, T-A-R-A.
I'll be Googling that when I'm out in the shack behind my house right now and don't have access to the internet. So I will look that up. That sounds wonderful.
Yeah, Terra Lila Trails in Vilas County. A listener emailed that he's a volunteer at Levi's Mound, and they groom trails for fat bike mountain biking as well as skiing. And snowshoeing is welcome on the bike trails, but of course frowned on the cross-country ski trails. It's actually helpful to snowshoe the bike trails to help pack them. So please encourage, the listener says, please encourage people to obey the signage at whatever trails they use.
Yep. Agreed. Yeah, I didn't think about that. Yeah, it actually is good for the fat bike guys because you're putting pretty large footprint compacting the snow, and even a fat bike tire is only, 4 inches wide, so it's still going to sink. So cool.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Well, what's your favorite place to snowshoe?
Oh, gosh. Can't tell you. Kill you. you know what's interesting is I like going on lakes. Now, it's controversial, right? But when we get 12 inches of snow on 6 inches of ice, I love going out on the lakes. Just kind of get in the zone. But there's downside to that is if you have thin ice and then a lot of snow, is that the ice doesn't get thicker, right? Because the snow is an insulator. So you got to make sure you got a good base. So you just have to watch it. But I'll go to Monona Bay sometime and just do a loop because the ice is always very thick there because it freezes early. But I'll go up north. I mean, the Northern Forest, what's it called? Up in Nevada's County, there's that giant northern, I can't remember the name of it right now.
Northern Lakes?
Yeah, I think that's what it is. Yeah, it's just off the Trout Lake up in there. But, there's plenty of trails. And, snowmobile trails are fine, too. It's like, everybody can get along. It's not that big of a deal.
And just quickly, any update on Canoocopia 2021?
Indeed. We are going full virtual. I did not feel like it was a safe thing to do this year. And we vetted a lot of different platforms. And we found one that's going to allow us to do speakers online, virtually, both live and recorded with Q&A. And the cool thing about that is there's no more, I couldn't get into that room, so I guess I have to miss that person, because the content's going to live on the site for a long time afterwards. So you can go back and watch every single talk. So we're working on that. It's just, COVID is...
Yeah.
COVID is COVID. the cool thing about it is some of the stuff we're doing now for the virtual one, we're going to keep doing when we're back together again. Because, why not have some speakers that are recorded and transmitted and people can watch from any place in the world, frankly. And, some of our speakers are, I've got a guy speaking on sea kayaking from Cornwall. And, he could never fly here.
Yeah.
We could, but it's just much easier for me to do it there. And I'm working on a guy who has a kayak outfitter in Venice who's going to do a presentation on paddling in Venice. So while COVID has its downside, clearly, the public health stuff is tragic, it's forced us to just look at everything a little differently. And some of that stuff's good.
Well, we'll have you back and talk about that as we get closer to that time. In the meantime, Darren, thank you so much for being with us today. Lots of great calls and questions, and you did your usual fine job of answering them. Thanks, Darren.
Feel free to give my email out, so I'll answer any more questions.
All right. The website is paddlers.com?
No, it's rutabaga.com.
Rutabaga.com. Sorry, rutabaga.com. There you go. Darren Bush, our guest today, chief paddling evangelist, and I guess we could call him the chief evangelist of snowshoeing as well. He owns Rutabaga Paddle Sports, and it's great to have him with us. And you know what? It's going to be great to talk with our next guest as well, DNR Secretary Preston Cole, back with us next on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mealer.